Let's go. So, good afternoon. How are you? Hopefully better than after lunch yesterday. You were tired. So, this session is all about managing and developing BI semantic models with the new project, tabular project type. And I know you're probably lame in one arm by now, but I do have to see a little bit about how much you have worked with the product to kind of tailor what I'm going to show you. And I also want to know a little bit about what other sessions you have attended. So, show of hands, how many of you have been working with tabular project types? Okay. How many of you have been working with power pivot models? Okay. V2 of power pivot? V1 of power pivot? OLAP cubes. There you go. It's definitely a different audience. That's good. How many of you attended the power pivot session I had yesterday? Okay. Okay, that's actually super helpful. Thank you. My name. I'm Julie Strauss. I'm a senior program manager lead in the analysis services team. My team focuses on all the tools for analysis services, so the Power Pivot UI, the UI for the tabular project type OLAP, as well as the UI in SSMS. So all of those experience is in my team. And the agenda, my favorite, demos. I do actually have a few slides today, just to go set the scene for the tabular project type and where it fits in and what we want to achieve with it. So I do have 5 slides. And the rest of that is demos. And yesterday I said it was because that was much easier than preparing my slides. Obviously, I am not allowed to say stuff like that. That's not why I'm doing it. So the reason I do demos is for the concept that I'm going to go through, it's just much easier to see visually than try and explain it in a slide. So I'm not that lazy, just so that's clear. Okay. So just looking at the momentum for analysis services, you could just see it in the room here. The majority of you are using it. It's widespread. Widely used is OLAP Cube in the market. There's a breadth of an ecosystem, lots of partners, building solutions on top of it, a lot of other UI applications that actually go on top of the multidimensional project type of analysis services. So with this release, we wanted to build on that richness, that ecosystem, and the strength of analysis services. But a lot of the feedback we have had over the years is the ramp-up time for working with multidimensional concepts. And then with the previous release, we released Power Pivot, which we really designed for Excel power users so that they could go and do analysis. And we never really meant them to know that they were building models. It just so happened that they built them in the background. But the uptake we saw from IT as well and BI professionals working with Power Pivot, it really became clear that it had a lot more value to a broader audience than just Excel users. But the feedback we also got was that there's a lot of professionals who are not necessarily interested in working in Excel. So that was when we made the decision of taking the same concept as we introduced with Power Pivot, tables and relationships that are more conceptually widespread for IT people, and make that same ease of use available inside Visual Studio. So that is basically the tabular project type. And I'll talk a little bit more later about how that fits with OLAP and Power Pivot and the user experiences. So the idea is here we have the multidimensional that have a little bit more flexibility, MDX, more flexible than DAX. We're obviously enriching DAX and it will become more and more flexible. In Power Pivot, it was for creating formulas. Now we are gradually turning it into query language. So there are some development on both fronts. So, but the idea was as well that we wanted to bring that all together into what we call the Microsoft BI semantic model. So Looking across Microsoft, there was another initiative where we have reporting services. All of the BI teams in Microsoft really like to build models. Reporting services had a model. We had the model. We had the UDM. Performance Point had a model. We just love models. And we thought, you know what? It would be much more efficient if we kind of split it out and have one team focusing on models. So that was when we all agreed that the analysis services team will own the BI semantic model for Microsoft. So now we are gathering requirements and making sure that all the efforts in building is in one team. So that's all goodness. What it really means is when we're talking about the BI semantic model, you can think of it in two ways. When an end user tool, for example, Excel, connects to a BI semantic model, which basically lives on analysis services, the experience for that end user is the same. Whether you connect to a project type created using multidimensional, or whether you created it using the tabular project type, that experience for that Excel user in the field list will look exactly the same. Now we have a tool like PowerView, who actually understands relational. Their field lists look exactly like the PowerPivot field list. You may have noticed there's two different field lists when you use PowerPivot. That looks like, that kind of exposed the tabular concepts. We have not yet been able to support PowerView over multidimensional. We are working on that. We haven't yet committed to when we will be releasing it. But the point is, when we release that, when you use PowerView, that will always look at the model, whether it's created with multidimensional or tabular. It will always look tabular. So the client team for the tool does never change. That user experience never changes. Where it does change is for the person developing the model. Because up front, you make a choice. Do you want to build it multidimensional or tabular? So that's really what we mean with one model. We are collecting all the requirements into one. For end user tools, it's experienced as one. But as developers, you will have a choice for which tool you want to work with, depending on your requirements. So that's really what we mean with one model. Yes, I'll come back to that. So if we look at the investments for this release for the analysis services team, we had three core investment areas. The first one was to develop what we call the IT Pro toolset that is essentially taking the PowerPivot code, tabular concepts, and embed that into Visual Studio. So everything we call tabular project type, we also call the IT professional toolset. So that was a core focus because that was a lot of work. It looks like it's not a lot. It is a lot of work. Fortunate because we have a shared code base for many of the components between PowerPivot and the tabular project type. There was a lot of features that we knew we had to do to ever be near to be a professional toolset, like the diagram view, like hierarchies. So because we have the shared code base, all of these features show up in PowerPivot. But there was only three features that were specifically built for PowerPivot, but there's a lot of new features in there because of that shared code base. What it means for us is we have to think much harder on the UI because it has to be easy for the non-professionals to use it. But so far, we have not seen anyone complain that things are too easy to use in Visual Studio, so we feel pretty good about that. You're laughing, but some actually said that when we started, and no, nobody wanted it. It's too simple. I'm like, I think that simple can be okay. So we haven't had any complaints yet, so if you have, please let me know. Feel free to educate me. Then the last piece is Management Studio. The changes we made there is that when you look at a tabular project type, that you actually see tables. In the beginning, we actually exposed still the multidimensional. Behind the tabular project type is still the multidimensional code. So initially, we actually showed the measure groups and the dimensions. But that we have changed, so now we expose the tables instead. And I'll be showing you some of that. I just have two more slides. That's because I didn't do any today. I'll do more today or yesterday. So this is a very important piece. This is what we delivered with PowerPivot. We delivered the tabular project type inside Excel. And Excel users could use it, upload it to SharePoint, where it could be managed by IT. But once you wanted to take that project and make that deploy to analysis services, you kind of had to start from scratch. We didn't have that link all the way. And that is one of the investment areas we kind of got almost for free by implementing the shared code base in Visual Studio. So what you can do now is have the Excel users start building their models in Excel. They can upload them to SharePoint, IT can manage them, they can discover, wow, they are either too large or too much data, or we need row-level security. You identify a need for that to be turned into a corporate BI project. You can take that workbook and restore it or implement it in Management Studio and deploy it, move the deployment from having the workbook deployed to SharePoint to having it deployed to Analysis Services instance. So that is one piece we have had a lot of good feedback on. We also had a lot of feedback where a lot of users actually started building in PowerPivot just because it's easy, and then whenever they're good to go, want to apply some of the features that are only available in the Pro Tools set, then they import and continue working with it. So we actually see the whole thing about we are professionals, we don't want Excel. It is actually another story we hear now. There's a lot that are using Excel and then importing. So it's an interesting shift that we see. So these are the feature areas that differentiate the two tool set. We had a lot of discussions around what should we do? Should we differentiate? Should we not? Should we force users to move to another tool when they want a specific feature? And we said our design goals should be that we don't want to force users to go to another tool to get a specific feature. So here we were thinking about, for example, the diagram view, hierarchies, and perspectives, which were kind of the critical pieces where we discussed should they be in PowerPivot or not. But we said we would like to have people, if they prefer to work in Excel, they should be allowed to stay in Excel. So we try to keep them on parity. There are four areas, though, that are somewhat obviously different. And these are some of the ones we'll go through today. The key ones are partitions. You're able to partition the data for more scale. Makes no sense in Excel. Direct query, where instead of caching the data, still have the semantic model, but have the queries pass through all the way back to the relational store that we'll also be walking through. And then we also obviously have the whole manageability aspects of it. SSMS, I will be showing you. You can still use AMO, PowerShell, SSIS packages, etc. for refresh, right? So that's another area where if a user says, oh, I want to update my PowerPivot workbook in SharePoint every 10 minutes, I don't think so, because what hit does that take on the back end, right? It's not nice for IT to just let up for that. So we said no. In PowerPivot, in that self-service environment, you can have daily refresh. But if you're willing to collaborate with IT and they can restore it on Analysis Services, then you can have the exact control refresh rate that is appropriate for the system. And then row-level security as well. So in SharePoint, when the workbooks are uploaded, you have security at the document level. So you secure that Excel workbook the same way you secure any document in SharePoint. Here, when you deploy to Analysis Services, we allow for role definition of row-level security, and that I will go through. And then obviously, the fact that it is in Visual Studio, there are some of the benefits with that. An area we do plan to work much more on than what we were able to do in the first release. So the features I'll be focusing on for the rest of the session is partitions, row-level security, and direct query, and then just the whole integration in SSMS and SSDT. So just one last slide, just the overview of the two tools. Apart from the features you just saw on the list on the other side, it's just kind of what, in the beginning we got a lot of questions on when to use what. We actually don't get that a whole lot more. I think people pick the tool that they feel most comfortable with, and that's where they are. And when you need one of the four features that I outlined, that's really when you move to Management Studio. So this is probably more legacy of questions than I think it's an actual problem. With that, let's go to demos. Let's see. Here? So actually, let me start out here. Mm. I want to start in the management dashboard. So here I have users working in the Power Pivot gallery. There you go. Over here in the gallery, they've uploaded all kinds of workbooks. The one of you working in IT can manage it here inside the management dashboard, right? This is where you would discover when it's time to take over a solution or go and collaborate with the information workers who built their own solutions in Power Pivot. So for example, it can be there's a very large bubble there. You may want to go find out why it's large. In this case, it's because of the size of the data. It has more than 100 million rows in it. That's a good example of a workbook where you potentially may want to take that and restore it on an analysis services instance without doing any other modeling. Just go directly to SSMS and restore it and apply row-level security and do partitions, right? It's a big data volume. What happens then is you can take it out of the farm, so that workbook no longer has a strain on the farm, but the users can continue working with their models. We haven't actually done the work to hook up the workbook that already existed. So you can hook them up, but there's a little few hacks you need to do and the slices need to be rebuilt. But the point here is that you can take the strain, that out, and go around the SharePoint farm and have all the load go to analysis services. Others would be if you have some of these that live for a long time, the ones that just go and come, like that are typically just temporary projects. You see some of them just come and go, come and go. You don't really have to worry about these because they live for a shorter period of time. But the ones that kind of keep living out there, it would also be interesting to go have a look at them and see, do they actually have enough richness in them? So let's say there's a workbook that used to have 5 users on it, and suddenly it has 500. That may be okay. It kind of tells you that there is a business need for that solution, right? But it doesn't mean that that user who designed that workbook has optimized it for use of 400 users. And when I say optimized for use, I don't mean performance, because that doesn't really matter. It's all in memory. What matters is the semantics you can keep enhancing. So for example, create user-defined hierarchy so each of the 500 users only have to click once rather than go to 5 different tables. Right? So there's a lot of enrichment you can do. In that scenario, you don't want to restore in SSMS. There you want to import into the Pro Tools set and keep enhancing the model and then deploy. Right? And again, you will now take the strain out of the farm and have the users go directly against the analysis services database. So with that, I want to start. There's 3 areas of the demo. I want to focus on, first talk a little bit about manageability, show SSMS. Here I will be showing how you restore the workbook, but also then go into SQL Server data tools and also import, show what you can do there and what you have to think about, and then start a project from scratch and do partitioning and security. Make sense? Or have you already fallen asleep? No, not quite. Okay. So, let's see. Out here, I have actually the workbook that I built in the Power Pivot session yesterday. So if we, just for the fun of it, let me make a copy. Inside this workbook now, I have a data file, right? So I can just rename this to a zip file. And here, this just tells me it's an Excel document. In here, I have custom data. Don't try this at home. Here I have a data file. This is all the data. This is what happens when you're in Excel and a user saves the workbook. We take a backup. That's what happens behind the scenes. And it backs it up into this data file. I can now take actually this data file and I can put it into a directory where analysis services can actually go grab it, and this you shouldn't do at home either. And I can rename it to an ABF. Are you sure? Yes, I am sure. And now I can go to analysis services. I can go and restore, and I can find that, hopefully, I can find that ABF file. Let's see. This resolution is Say OK. And let's see what happens. So this was the way you had to do it before. So you had to hack open the file and pull out the data file, and all kinds of stuff may potentially happen. So, but this is really how simple it is, right? It's just an ABF file inside analysis services. Let's see. There it actually is. It also gives, it always gives it a default name, and there are all my tables and my connections. That's how simple it is. However, we did a little bit more work for the release. Now we actually, let me go back to this project file, take the Excel file. This you can do at home. Take the Excel file, put it in the same folder, and go to SSMS again. What you see here, you see different icons. This is, this means that it's an analysis services instance that has been deployed with using Tabular. This is actually my SharePoint farm, so that's Power Pivot for SharePoint. And if I had multidimensional, it would have the regular cube there. And this is actually the only way you can differentiate them in here. It's just the icon. There's no property exposed where you can see it. So I thought it would be worth mentioning because we do get a lot of questions. So here I have Restore, which I just used, and now I have Restore from Power Pivot. I can click on this one. And now I should be able to see just that Excel file. And I can go down here, say OK, and I call this one my BI semantic model. I may have a few of those, actually. Let's see. And now this actually does the same thing that I did manually. It cracks open the file, it takes the ABF file, and restores it. And so it looks pretty simple, but in this process, we actually do take care of upgrade as well. So let's say this could have been in workbook coming from V1 of Power Pivot, and you can still point to that, and we do the upgrade automatically as well as part of this process. And this process is supported. So there you go. There's my BI semantic model. There's my connection and my tables. So that was pretty simple, wasn't it? There's a few things I might want to do now. First of all, I took this. I actually did use another computer yesterday. So I would want to go and change my connection string, first of all, because the database I pulled from was just from my local database. So I could just go in here, SQL BI demo. I think that's a database. Let's see. No, that's not at all what it's called. SQL BI BI demo. OK. Now it's thinking for a while. There you go. SQL BI. This should work better. And we go from Atlanta to Orlando. And now that is there. Now I could go ahead and I can process my tables. I can actually select all of them. I want to do a full process just to make sure that the restore actually worked correctly. Next thing I have to do is security, because nobody can access this right now, right? When we are in SharePoint, we just analysis services, go and listen to SharePoint and say, what do we have permissions to do? Nothing is here, so nobody can really access it right now, apart from me, because I'm an admin on the machine. So the first thing I would have to go and do now, after I change the connection, is to go and create a role, at least, so users can connect. So I did processing successful. And another thing, most time, I do it all the time, I go and click refresh all the time. Because we call it refresh in Power Pivot, but refreshing here just refresh the Explorer, right? So we've changed the terminology to fit with multidimensional. So I'm actually processing tables instead of refreshing. Processing does something very different than what it does in multidimensional, right? There you do all the aggregations. Here, the only thing you're doing is basically refreshing the data, fixing a few indexes, but that's really it. So the performance you get When you're done, here, that's the performance you get. That's depending on your memory. There's some tuning you can do. There's a session tomorrow morning if you want to know all the details. But in short, this is basically what you get, right? So all the aggregation management is not really needed there. So now what I would have to go do here is go and define a role, new role. And I could just say users and decide what control they should have, full control. Should they be able to just process the database? If it's a DBA, does it need to actually read the data? Or is it an end user group that just needs to be able to read the data? So I could apply that in here. And I can also go and obviously add members and then add role level security. I'm actually going to go through this in the second part of the demo inside SQL Server Development Studio. So I'm going to skip that for now. The other thing I can obviously do in here, which is another good reason why you may want to restore directly, is to do partitions. So by default, each table has a partition in here. So that's just the default partition. And as you noticed here, I actually clicked the dimension table. That's different for multidimensional as well. You only partition your fact tables. Here you can partition any table. We don't differentiate dimensions and facts. So for many of you, that may not necessarily be relevant, but for some with large dimensions, that is actually helpful, depending on how they change, etc. So I'm also going to cover partitions from SQL Server Development Studio. So that's really what there is to management in here. So again, this is a scenario where I just give my workbook to a DBA or a person who doesn't necessarily need to further enhance the model, but it's a scenario where you want to take the strain away from SharePoint, deploy directly, have security, and potentially partition, right? Okay, so let's close this and go to, actually, let me start this one. Go to SQL Server Data Tools. I'm very schizophrenic here. I have already heard myself say BI Development Studio, SQL Server Data Tools. So no wonder if you're confused, because I can't even keep heck of it. So here, in the previous releases of SQL, we had BI Development Studio, Integration Services Project, Reporting Services Project, and Analysis Services Project, so the BI projects. Now we have the SQL Server Database projects as well, and it's all merged into one. So that's why we call it the SQL Server Data Tools. So whatever I say, I mean SQL Server Data Tools, but you may also think of it as BI Development Studio or BIDS. We have merged, migrated all the templates, which you will see. Whoops. There you go. So when I open the environment, I will go to new project. And here you have at the business intelligence level, we have all the, and a little bit more projects than you may be used to seeing. And then we have analysis services projects. And here you see a few new ones. And we have renamed a few as well. So we have the multidimensional and data mining, which used to be OLAP and data mining, I think. For me, that's a while ago. I've looked at that. So that's the traditional project types you have with analysis services. And the import from analysis services and from the server is the same. Then we have three new projects. And I'll go through these. These are for creating a new tabular project from scratch. I'll be going through that a little bit later. Then we have import from Power Pivot, and we have import from server. Import from server is a little bit interesting in this scenario, because if I actually went ahead and did the partitioning and did the row level security, now it makes no sense for me and go and import the Power Pivot workbook and deploy it, because guess what? I'm overriding everything I just did. So in that scenario, I really want to take the connect to the database directly in SSMS or analysis services and import from there. There are, and that's not a big deal. It's just point to the database and you're good to go. If you have access to the back end, you're fine. We just transition the metadata, not the actual data. So you just say process all and you're good to go. And you'll get the changes that you made in SSMS. There are some scenarios where you don't always have access to the back end necessarily. And you can actually, and what you will see is you just never get the data. But you can actually take a copy of the model.bim file and put it in the same directory, and remove your user setting file and reprocess. So there's a blog post about that, but you can actually get around that in case you don't have the access. If you just need to, for example, help an end user that pulled it a while ago and the data really isn't there. So there's a way of doing that if you show up with an empty model. But I'm going to start just quickly importing from Power Pivot. Let's see. Where do I have that? Maybe that wasn't where I had it. Oh, hold on. Okay. There you go. There is my Excel file, and open it. And it will go ahead. One more, it will actually take a little while. Another thing that is worth mentioning in the other scenario where you restore directly in SSMS is when you use Power Pivot, you know, you have the Power Pivot field list where you can drag columns, like numeric value columns, into the values field, and we automatically generate the measures behind the scene. No? Yes? No? No response. I have no idea what you're talking about. Yes. So we don't require you to create calculations or measures in Power Pivot before you can start using it. You can just take a numeric column, add it to values, and we generate a measure behind the scenes, what we call implicit measures. This workbook that you created in Power Pivot never have been used, never ever, then no measures exist. But when you deploy to analysis services and use a traditional client tool, measures are required. Because most of them see them as measure groups and dimensions. So it's very important to have that in mind because you deploy it and nobody can really use that unless it's been a Power Pivot workbook that a lot of users have been using. So what happens with these implicit measures when we upgrade, that's why you shouldn't be hacking the file, is we actually transition them into explicitly created measures where you now can change the formulas and they behave the exact same way as if you have created the formula yourself. But I'll show you that experience. So there you go. So it imported this all the tables that I have, and I obviously have the diagram view, and everything is really ready to use. And I can go and apply. Oh wow, that's a big display folder. And I can't really find my tables. There you go. So that's really how simple it is. Now I can just go ahead and deploy this one and start updating it. Any questions on this so far?
Are you going to cover starting a new one?
I'm doing that right now. Yep. So when I start a new one, I'll just go ahead. New project. I will go right there. I'll go to my folder. Yeah, I can actually be there. And I will call this I can call this soft drinks. So I remember which one it is. And I can double click this one and start a new project. So first, actually what you will see, I don't know if you noticed that before, but you can still see that because I haven't refreshed it. Here, if you pay attention to the databases, now if I go in and refresh, you'll see a new database pop up. This one. As I created the empty model shell, I also created a workspace database. The workspace database is the database I work with whenever I create tabular models. So everything is in memory, and I work against that database. So that, when you first set it up, first time you use it, you'll get prompted to go and connect it. You have settings in there that you can define for which one to connect to. But you have to have the, so here I have a local instance of analysis services on this machine. So here I have an empty project, And here you see I have the solution and the model BIM, the BIM file, the BI semantic model file. So this obviously looks, I don't have any tables yet, but even when I have, this actually won't change. So in multidimensional, you have each of your dimensions you can check in and check out. With this release, we went with one entire model. Definitely an area we would like to invest more in moving forward. But it is a lot of work to get it all separated out. But that is definitely an area we would like to put more investments moving forward. So the other integration points, we integrate with the menu system in Visual Studio. So here you see three menu items, model, which is tied to everything that has to do with the model overall, like import, settings, etc., table level, and column level. And then we have two features living over here that can be hard to find, which is copy and paste. So, and don't ask me why they live in that menu, but they live over there. And I want to point it out because nobody can really find them for two reasons. It's not necessarily logic, they live over there, so they may move to a new home the next release. But the other thing is, most users don't expect to be able to copy and paste when working in Visual Studio, copy-pasting tables. But we did it for two reasons. First of all, because we wanted to make sure we could support that end-to-end scenario of actually receiving the Power BI workbooks. But also, when you do quick prototyping, this can be super helpful. If you have large tables, we don't necessarily recommend copy-pasting. It will go straight into XMLA, so it will be part of the model script. So you don't want to have 100 million rows of copy, not that we support that either. But for smaller projects and for temporary tables, it can be an easy way of just get going with a project. So there you go, and we'll go through all of these. Let me just start by importing some tables. You see now I just look at a big gray screen. So I will go and import tables. And this you will probably recognize for those of you who have used Power Pivot, because, wow, that's hard. That is the exact same code base. So that's the same import wizard. So I can just connect here to my local machine, I think. SQL BI demo. I should have my school menu back. I can't spell. And I can connect to my Orlando Orange soft drink data warehouse. And obviously, you use a dedicated Windows account. I will use this service account just for the sake of the demo. Again, obviously, this is where most of you are probably going to go. Write your own queries for retrieving your data. I will just pick from my list of tables. So I'll go and select retail sales, select all my rated tables, and I'll just add a few more because I need them later on, product category and subcategory. And that's really all I need. Obviously, I still have all the filtering that I have in Power Pivot as well. Nothing is really different here apart from the user account. That's the only difference in the import wizard between the two environments. So now this one will go ahead and import all the tables. Give it a second. There you go. And there we are. So again, it's telling me, Julie, you should really not be using the service account. No, I know. So again, we have integration here with the error list. Another place where that is, we also have in place hookup with the error list. So for example, if I go in and I create Actually, I'm going to hold that a second. I'm going to come back to the error list. The other areas that we have integrated is with the property grid. And it's really hard to see because of the resolution here. But you have, obviously, the column name, all the date formatting for each of the columns are hooked up here to the property grid, your formatting, data types. Sort by other column where you would define if you want to, for example, sort your date fields properly in natural sort order. And then we have all the reporting properties. So these are the reporting properties that I quickly mentioned in my previous session. Casper de Jonge had a session this morning, I think, covering a lot of this. which are really reporting properties that any tool can leverage. So far, it's been mostly for the reporting services team because they are leveraging these with Power View, which really just additional semantics. You can add properties you can add to better control how fields are laid out when you do when end users will do their reporting. So these are there. You can obviously multi-select across columns and apply all in one go. So these are really the core integration point with Visual Studio. So three different menus, the Solution Explorer, Property Grid, Error List I'll come back to. So that's really the core integration points. Here you see the little star. I've imported data, so my project is dirty. So I'll just save it. It can be a good idea to save it once in a while because when I close this project, that temporary database that I have is also gone. So it's worth saving. Okay, so that's really the basics. Now, next step I want to go and see what I've built. This was really just, five clicks to import data. That's all I've done. And I essentially have a model that is more or less ready to use because there is no aggregation design. There is no settings that I have to do. The data is what the data is, right? But there is one problem, though, so let's go have a go look. The way I forgot to show that in Management Studio, we used to have the OWC component to browse with. That component has been deprecated, and now the services team, the last team, we kept hanging on to it, and we begged to keep it, but now it's gone. We replaced it with the reporting services query designer, so you still have an experience for browsing your data in SSMS. But it's just a different experience. So, and in here, we actually hooked the browse experience up to Excel. So now I can go and say analyze in Excel. What happens is, I can just click default. I haven't really created anything yet. What will happen is it will open an instance of Excel. In this case, I have everything on my machine. I'm fine. In the scenarios where you're connecting to a remote server from your desktop, you will also be fine. You likely have Excel there. If you're working on the actual server where you don't have Excel, whenever you click Analyze in Excel, you'll be prompted to save an ODC file, and you can just take that with you. It's not necessarily ideal when you're sitting on the server, but the feedback we've had so far is that it has been working out okay, and people like to be able to actually verify exactly what the end users will see if they're using Excel. So what happens here is I have this thing here. Here's my field list. So note, I haven't deployed. I've done nothing yet. I've just imported tables, and I'm connecting. It's because it's all in memory. So the connection string is actually going directly to that temporary database, this one, right? So it makes it very easy to go and test and verify what you've built. And I can take another instance of Excel if I had the permission. Just copy that string and connect to it, and it would be feeling the same as if I had actually deployed it. So here's a fun concept. Here's my measure group, right, that you know from multidimensional. And what does it give me? It gives me a message saying that no measures are defined. Why? Because they are not. And because Excel expects measure groups, right? They expect measures. They can't read the tables and the fields like we can in the Power Pivot field list. So when I have no measures defined, this is the reason it is actually there, first to explain that one. It used to have a completely different name in the early CDPs, which was very confusing. Now we try to give it a meaningful name. It does give you a hint that you need to go and create them. If we do not create that, Excel is not actually able to create the pivot table, so you're completely stuck. So have in mind, even if we made all of these changes, Excel didn't actually introduce any changes at all for their release yet. So that was why we did this. So obviously that means I'll go back and create some calculations. So I'll go into this one. If I have time in the end, I will talk much more about the measure grid, but I did cover it yesterday, and I would like to make sure I get time for security and partitions. But if I have time, I'll go and talk more. First of all, I'll just say, so there is a grid at the bottom of the table, for those of you who doesn't know. It's a free-form grid, for defining calculations, for creating measures. It's click and point, completely freeform. You make up your own system if you want one. The good thing about it is I can multi-select 5 tables. I can go in here in what we call the auto sum in Excel, called summarize. I have different options, and I do sum. And in a single click, I've created 6 measures, 7. That's pretty simple. No? Are you tired, really? Yes. Okay. I can go back now into Excel, and I can refresh. There you go. So there I have all my different measures, and now I'm actually ready to work with this. Now that underscore you need measures can go away because we are able to create the pivot table. Once I delete all my measures, it will come back. So now I can actually go and test my model pretty quickly. I can just add some random fields. Doesn't really matter what it is. And you'll see now, obviously, I'm working with the Excel field list, not the Power Pivot field list. And we have gotten a lot of questions. How can I enable the Power Pivot field list? There is no way of doing that. So now you're working exact same way the end users would be working when they connected to an OLAP cube. So again, user experience is the same. And for those who never use Power Pivot, they are really used to this, so it's not really a problem. It's only for the ones most frequently that has been working with slices that like that experience and the drag and drop. But in this scenario, you have been defining calculations anyway, so the whole drag and drop and use of implicit measures is not as critical in this environment because they're not necessarily wanting to do that. So this was basically what I needed to do. So I think I ended at 8 clicks. So many, many, many years ago when I joined SQL Server, we had with 2005, I think, oh, look, we can do a cube in 5 clicks. And I loved that. I didn't have to go and tune them afterwards, so that was easy for me to say, 5 clicks. But now we are actually there. Now you can actually do it in 5 clicks, and there is no tuning required. So I'm not causing a lot of problems down the line. So that's just to point out the simplicity of this. No? Is it simple? Nah. Okay, let's have a look at something much more exciting than security. Oh my God, how many of you am I going to lose in that process? So, security, let's start. I will start by defining a role. Yes, a question. So when when the tool connects to the model from Excel, does it send MDX or DAX? It sends MDX. PowerView sends DAX. So I'll go and create a new role. I'll just call this one. I'm so brainwashed, so I will say US sales. Okay, and I need to give permission, again, the same you saw before, process, read, write, I'll do not write, but read, and I'll give it a description. Here we have an interesting little thing you may want to know. It's fixed. We had a bug that if you ended up in there but didn't type anything, you could never get out of it, but apparently we were smart enough to fix it. There you go. And so now I've created my role. Next thing I want to do is create role-level security. So difference from Power Pivot, we support more fine-grained level security. Difference from multidimensional is we support role-level, not object-level. So you can't secure the columns, for example. It's role-level security. So let me go through some of this. And this is also some of the things we would like to obviously elaborate on as we move forward. So first, let me do snack sales. So I'll go in here to my product category. Here I have to write DAX sentences. So I can just start typing. If I use an equal, you will invoke autocomplete, so it's worth doing. You get a little bit of help. Let me see. Product. product category I want to find. Product category name, for example. Oops, I didn't actually commit that. Product category name equal snacks, I think it is I want to go for. There you go. And see if it actually will accept that. No. Let me see. I am wondering what I am doing wrong. Let me just... No, I don't. Is that really it? That is it. There you go. Thank you. So now I can go ahead. The only thing I can see now when I log on as this user is snacks. I've just been writing SQL queries, so why be consistent if you don't have to? there, I got to pay for that one. So now I can go ahead and test this role. So here you see different options. Later we can also be testing perspectives, but now I can just test this role in Excel. I can select snacks and say okay. And now I should be able to filter Excel down here. Should be blinking, ready to go. So now when I select, I should select same amount. This amount is quite different than the other amount I had, right? But I've only selected the tax amount, not the dimension yet. That's the difference between tabular and multidimensional as well. We actually travel the relationships. So the filtering kicks in the second you add a field to the table. So if I go in now and add product categories, oops, there you go. You'll see I can only see snacks, but it doesn't change only when I add the dimension. It uses the relationships. So, but I can add on. I can also go in and say add some more security to this one. I can say I also want to add a geography. So I can simply go in here. Actually, let me just copy this one. That's also super simple. I know you are hard to impress, but it actually does save some time. US snacks. And this is also read, and so it inherited, obviously, this one. And now I can just go and apply one more dimension to it. I can say sales territory. This time I want to use key. Actually, it won't let me do that. Okay, I wanted to show you, I could actually do that. If I go into sales territory, what I want to show is multiple. So I want to show, for example, North America. So I'll use the IDs more than 6. So I'll go in here again. Go into my US snacks, and I'll say equals is smaller than or equal to 6. This should work. And say OK. And apply this one. Go back and test Excel. Check the role. Now I have a new role, US snacks. Say OK. And it should be blinking down here. I'll have 50 open Excel instances by the time we're done. So I'll check sales amount. I can go and find my snacks. Now I'm missing the search from the Power Pivot field list. Name, that's my snacks. But now the number is even smaller because if I look at the country, I only have North America there. Okay? So if I go in here to the connection, I can actually see these settings in here, and I can just easily remove them. You should see my role in here somewhere. There, US role, right? I can simply go in and delete this one and say OK. Are you sure? And you'll see. So it's all just then the connection string in that ODC file, what we're testing. So, yes? Can you add other, your custom code? No, not in there. What you can do, though, so now I'm hard coding each of my security settings. That's probably not what you want, right? If you have multiple countries, you want more of a dynamic security. So you can just define one role, but have each country loop into that. So the way I will do that is out here, I will create, we'll use a lookup table where I have my security roles defined. I will hide that table, and I will not create any relationships. I will look it up, and then have that defined on the fly as I log on with my various accounts. So let me just copy this segment out here into Excel anywhere, just because we copied tables into, if I just copied from Notepad, it wouldn't actually read it, but now it's copying it as a table. And this now I get good use of copy-paste. Whoops, just click somewhere. There you go. Paste, and it pastes as a table. And I'll call it, oh my god, that's hard to spell. Security, there you go. So here you see what I had on my clipboard. So this is just a separate table that will live on its own. It's just used for looking up. So I have username and the sales territory country, which is simply one of the fields from the other tables. I have three uses and three different areas. Now, normally, you would obviously go in here now and create a relationship, right? I will not do that. And why is that? Because we travel the relationship. So once I secure this entire table, and if I have a relationship, you'll see nothing, absolutely nothing. So instead, what I will be using is this formula. Oops, let's zoom in. Where I'm actually using what corresponds to the Excel lookup function. So let me just get this one in, see what I will go into my security table. I'll go back in here, and I will go into my role. I'll create a new wall that I'll call dynamic, just so I remember it, and read. And now I will go down to my sales territory table. This one I'll just paste in. If it actually copied it, maybe it didn't. Copy, paste, there you go. So now I have that in there. What this is really saying is when you're in the sales territory table, the lookup value says go to the security table in that country column and look up the username in there, match it with the username that I'm using to log on, and use that to filter the sales territory country. Okay? So let's see how that works. Now security, this one I want to secure the whole table. I can do that. I can say equal false, because I don't necessarily want my users to have to access the security table or see that it's even there. So I'll go in there. And this one I would obviously want to hide as well. It's just secure, but it still shows. So I'll go and just hide it from client tools. What happens is it will just be grayed out there. It's still fully operational. I could do whatever with it that I want. I can create hierarchies and work with it, etc. And now one important part, obviously, when it's dynamic, I do need to add a member to it as well that I will use for testing. I can't actually do that because this machine isn't on the network, so the user I would use, I can't really test anyway. But last step will be to add a member. And now I'll go in here, and when I test this one, I wouldn't choose my security role. I will choose to test that with one of these users that hopefully I could have access to. And then you would see, for example, if I logged on with SQL BI, I would only see Italy. Now, what I would do is just log on to the role, and because I am the admin on this machine and I'm there, what I would see is actually the US sales. Okay? Make sense? Are you sleeping now? Yeah. Yes, so question is, do you have to secure each table in the proper area? And the answer is yes. And actually, at the end of the session, I have some small flyers for feedback. I'm asking each one of you who have any feelings or suggestions for what you would like to see us focus on for the next release. I'll put these out, and I would love to have your feedback on, because obviously this is the first release we have. We had a super short time frame to do it. We think we did a lot in this short time frame, but we also know we have more to do. So it's very important that I could get your feedback to help focusing on the right things. I'll just quickly go through, time is actually flying. I saw your question, I'll come back. I do want to show partitioning as well, which is the last key piece that we haven't done anything of yet. So let's see in here. I won't show the measure grid. I'll go in here and let's see. Why am I in there? So let me go into partitions, into the partition dialog. As I said before, every single table has a default partition. It's the whole table. And every single table can be partitioned. Here, I want to look at the fact tables, sales. What you see in here is obviously the same preview you see when you import the data using the table view. What I want to do here is I have all imported all sales tables or all sales transactions from all my years. When you do an actual project, you're likely not going to do that because you have everything in memory. So what you would do differently than what I did when I started, you will probably use the filtering to do just a subsection. So you just work with a subsection of your data rather than work with 5 years' worth of data, right? So what I want to do here is I will go and add a filter, because I want to change these. So I have actually looked up what the date keys are. So let me just go in here and filter. I will apply a number filter that is greater than or equal to 1 and greater and less than or equal to exactly 265. Who wouldn't know that? So now I will call this my 2000 and I think that would be 8 retail sales. And I will save this. So now what I want to do is switch. Here you switch between the table view and the query view. And here it's much easier for me to simply copy this one. I'll go up here. Actually, and I will copy this one. Oops. Actually, maybe I need, let me just activate this one first. And I'll go in here. I copy this one. That wasn't what I wanted to do. Okay. This one I would call my 2009. And it's no longer a copy. And I will edit the SQL from before. Now this one I obviously want to start with 265 to whatever is left, 730. I'm not going to continue going, but you get the gist of it. Whoops. Yes. I did product key. Then I will come up with something really funny. Yes. That wasn't my intention. But anyway. So no, I would have wanted to take my date key. Did I not do that in the first one either? I did product key. Anyway, I have done a very interesting partition here. It's about creativity. But no, obviously what I would do is filter on my date and I would get to the same thing. Maybe I should. I actually do need to correct it. No, it's okay. But you get the point, right? You go and find your years, create your filters, copy-paste them out so you have one partition for each year, and it may actually completely break now. So why not just continue and see it break? And I say, okay, see if it actually will. And now I would have Obviously, I would have one for each year. I want to have all my, typically you would, could also potentially take all your historic sales just in one. The point is that you don't want to keep processing the values that not that doesn't change anymore. So just have the hot piece, the current sales in one partition on its own. I can process all, which means all tables. I can process a single table, which corresponds to refresh and power pivot, or I can process partitions. Right, so now I can process one at a time. Now you would actually, hopefully, I don't know what I've done really, so you may not see anything, but most likely this one will actually change now. It didn't, because apparently the IDs does overlap with my date. But what you have seen, if I had managed to take my right ID, was now this number would go down to 2,000, or how many transactions I had in that year. And you can partition these individually, okay? And partition. Sorry? Can you do dynamic partitioning? Yes, you can. I think you can. I haven't actually played a whole lot with that, but I'm quite sure you can do that. Can you? Yeah. I think you can, but to be honest, I haven't tested it. But feel free to send me an email, and I'll follow up on it. Okay. So that is basically partitioning. I did something. Let's see. Yeah, I did something. The number changed. Not exactly the way I had planned, but that's the way it is when you do stuff live. And now I'll just go and save it. The last thing I want to do is obviously go and deploy. We have the same deployment wizard that you, many of you are already familiar with. There you go. Oh. This actually just kind of lends the experience for the import wizard. It just goes through each of them, and it will go ahead and deploy. And there you go, pretty painless. Now what happens is when you go back into Management Studio and I refresh, now I got this one. So now when I close Visual Studio, the temporary database will go away, and my users will actually be connecting to that actual analysis services database. Okay. One last thing I would like to touch on is direct query. Direct query, have you heard about direct query at all? Yes. So direct query will allow you to go directly against a SQL Server database and do the query. So we are not caching in that instance. So obviously you can reach larger data volumes in that way. You can combine that with the column store index in the back end and get good performance. Some of the things that you have to be aware of, that when you do direct query, we support, actually I can show some of that. If I now, the location I will change it in is in here, on the model properties. I should see that. Oh, hold on. Let's see, properties. There, direct query mode is off. I can change that. If I change that to on now, I'll get a warning saying some stuff that I've done that is not supported. So we do not support calculated columns. We do support calculated meshes, obviously, but not calculated columns. We do only support SQL Server database, and we only support one instance of SQL of coming from one database. So if I were to start, I'm actually going to close this one now. If I were to start a new project, there's two locations where you can change the setting. There you go. So when I start a project from scratch, if I know it's going to be a project where I want to use direct query, then I can actually do myself a favor. Tabular. And I will call this one, it became tabular project number 5, apparently. Now when I have an empty model, there's two settings. So one here is direct query mode off. I can now change that to on, because I haven't done any violations yet, right? What this does is only changing my modeling experience. It helps me guide me to not make sure I don't do stuff that is not supported. Before I actually deploy, I go to the project level and change the product, the setting in here as well, direct query. That is where you would change the actual deployment, right? I don't have to do that up front. I can also work with a being in non-direct query and just do the edits that I need to do, for example, get rid of my calculated columns, and I can still deploy. But the point here with setting it on the BIM file is to help you guide you and make sure you don't spend time doing stuff that is not supported. So the difference here would be that when you go to model and import, voila, there's only one. There's only SQL Server, right? If you try to insert a, let's see, just copy this table. You see, copy-paste is super handy. I go in here. Maybe it's not that handy. Paste. Copy-paste is not supported either. There you go. Super helpful. So you are constantly told. The same if I had a column, wanted to insert a column. The insert additional calculation isn't even there. So we help you guide, make sure the same now. If I connect it to SQL Server, I can obviously connect multiple times. But if I do not pick the same instance or the same server that I already connected to, I would also be stopped. So it's just to try and help you in the design time to make sure that you spent your time wisely. With that, I have 3 minutes left. I will stay for questions, or I'll probably go outside for questions. But please feel free to ask. I will actually throw these pieces up on here. I do have sheets here. There's 3 lines on it. A suggestion for each thing you would like to see us work on in the next release. If you want to have a say, if you ever want to complain, I do encourage you to go and voice your opinion too. With that, I want to say thank you for coming. Thank you for at least some of you staying awake. That was very good. I will stay for questions, and you can ask questions now as well. Thank you.